Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your condominium and HOA questions, so give us a call right here in the studio. 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking the Email the Show tab.
And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, and you can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites as well.
And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call off the air and pick our brains, you can call Glazer & Associates at 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com.
Well, last show we spoke about Miami-Dade's awful unemployment situation, some estate planning tips regarding your condominium and HOA, and of course we touched on how the new Supreme Court decision has lots of residents living in Florida community associations really confused about what laws apply to them and which do not.
And that confusion, Karen, was certainly evident this past Thursday night at our Condo Craze Board Certification Seminar at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood. This was the first seminar, actually, since the Florida Supreme Court ruled in the Cone case, and many of those in attendance were absolutely surprised to learn that if your association documents don't contain a clause that adopts future statutory amendments, many changes to the condo and HOA laws that have come into existence since your condo or HOA was built simply don't apply to your association. And again, let me tell you, a lot of people look dazed and confused. You were there, you know.
Yes.
And this includes, by the way, former House member Elaine Bloom, who served in the Florida legislature for over 18 years. She was in attendance at the seminar and was definitely surprised to learn that when her brethren in the Florida legislature pass a new condo law, it only applies to condos that have that future amendments language in their docs. And she made her position very clear, at least at the seminar, that she was definitely not supportive of that decision. But before we move on, did you guys see all the controversy this week about how many different radio call-in shows how they're being accused of using fake actors and actresses to actually call in during a radio show and create these fake cases and controversies in order to make the show sound more interesting? You see that?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we were speaking about that on the morning show this week here on 850 WFTL. There are actually companies out there who sell these services to radio shows and promise to create lots of juicy stories in order to make the show sound more exciting, to light up the phone lines and get the callers eager to pick up the phone and call in.
I see that most radio shows hosts have already come out and said they don't use that service because they thought it would be misleading.
And we're going to believe them?
Yeah, but the other school of thought is that the radio is entertainment. I guess anything that makes it entertaining is worthwhile, but I can say this, Eric. We have never had any phony people on the show.
No.
Other than the lawyers.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's set the record straight in regards to this show, Scott and Karen. Condo Craze and HOAs, I'm here to tell everybody that we have never, ever faked a call to this show. We never use paid actors or actresses to create fake scenarios or false controversies. And there's one reason for this. It's because sometimes this truth is stranger than fiction. And with all of the insane, crazy, and ridiculous stories that naturally flow out of our condos and HOAs each and every day and wind up spoken about on this show, there's no need to make anything up. Here in Florida, or should I say, the mecca of condos and HOAs, the wild and wacky trials and tribulations of boards and unit owners, is simply a book that continues to write itself, each and every week, so there's just no need on our end to fake any phone calls. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Amen. You're not kidding. All right, but how about some very good news to report for a change about our community? The crime rate, it was reported this week in Florida, is the lowest in 40 years, according to new statistics for 2010, released Tuesday by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. That's pretty good news.
Right.
In South Florida, the overall crime rate dropped as well. Broward County saw a drop of 5.7%. Miami-Dade's overall crime rate was down by 4.6%, and Monroe dropped by 7.4%, better than the state average.
Yeah, that seems really unusual to me, Eric, because isn't the usual thing that when employment goes up, crime goes down, and when people don't have jobs, that's when they get into trouble?
Yeah, right. Absolutely true. But maybe, I guess, if everybody around you is also unemployed and broke, it just isn't anybody worth stealing from, I guess.
Well,
yeah.
Let's just hope that the trend continues. And with publications like Time Magazine repeatedly trashing South Florida the last few years, it's certainly nice to get some good press in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's move on to the hot topic of the day.
Oh.
And that's all of the controversy that now surrounds emotional support animals.
Woof.
Ooh,
woof,
yeah.
Woof.
You told me we were going to talk about construction today.
Yeah, construction. Emotional support animal debate. Those of you that live in communities that don't allow pets, you now understand that your rules and regulations and even your declaration of condominium or your declaration of covenants cannot prevent any owner from having an emotional support animal live with them. If that owner can simply prove that the animal provides some emotional support that alleviates a symptom or affects the disability, and that's about it. That's the test. Is the symptom eliminated by having the pet?
Yeah, we've had to continue and have a bunch of these types of cases in the office where the association refuses to allow an owner to obtain an emotional support animal because the governing documents prohibit pets. And each one basically turns into a circus.
Yeah, you're not kidding. After we get back from the break, our listeners are going to hear that the law in this area is very much against an association.
You know, I was talking to Sean Virtue, our insurance guru,
sure.
And he says the pet always wins. The insurance company paid out $600,000 in court cases.
Really?
The pet always wins.
I'll tell you, I can tell you this. Arbitrators at the DBPR will tell you the most hotly litigated issue all the time is the pet issues, whether or not they're a nuisance, whether or not it's required for the unit owner who needs emotional support. That's the type of case that gets filed and litigated the most. And associations are getting sued, and they're having to spend exorbitant sums of money trying to keep their community pet free. Proponents of emotional support animals talk about the wonderful benefits that pets can provide to depressed people, while critics claim that if you need a pet to provide you with emotional support, move to another condominium that allows for pets. Indeed, many of the opponents of the emotional support animal debate specifically moved to their own community just because it was a no-pet community, and they feel that their contractual rights are being destroyed by the emotional pet supporters. In any event, this is a topic that, again, really gets people crazy one way or the other. We're going to talk about the current state of the law, the differences between the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Fair Housing Act. We'll talk about why HUD believes it's more powerful than even the appellate courts of this state, and hopefully get our listeners' views on this very controversial matter. Emotional support animals, is it a hoax or is it justified? And even if you believe it helps, does that still give you a right to force your pet into a community that prohibits them? Tell us what you think. Give us a call here in the studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585, and we will be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA. We're taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585, and we've had a couple people on hold here. Walter from Deerfield Beach, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a quadriplegic. I use a wheelchair. I'm living in my condo for the last 6 years. I have a wheelchair-accessible van parked in a covered assigned spot near the building entrance. And recently the condo told me I was no longer allowed to park my van in my assigned spot because the tenant who parks next to me is afraid someone will run into her car as she backs out of her spot because she can't see over my van. They told me to move my van to an uncovered guest spot, which is about 200 feet away from the building entrance. Is this legal under condo law, and how about disability law?
This actually came up at the seminar this past Thursday night. Question for you, are there any commercial units in your condominium?
No, it's all residential.
Okay, because there's no commercial units, I would say you have to probably check with the local building department as to whether or not there's even a requirement to have handicap parking in your community. Now,
the spot that I'm in, it's not even a handicap spot. It's just a standard parking spot.
It's just
assigned and covered.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Now, then I'd have to look at your declaration of condominium and actually see if the spot that was assigned to you is actually a limited common element that's a pertinent to your specific unit. Is it something that you get as a matter of right when you bought that specific unit? Or are all the condominium, are all the common areas and the parking simply just common areas, just that, and assignable by the board? In other words, if it's just a common element, the board can make reasonable rules and regulations and basically put people where they want.
Whether or not this is reasonable, though.
We are assigned to one limited spot, to one assigned spot. We are limited to just that one spot, and they can reassign us to a different one, but they will actually want to put me in guest parking.
Right, but, again, I'd have to look at your declaration, but it seems to me that, no, if your documents require you to get a non-guest parking spot to be assigned to your unit, then that's exactly what you're entitled to. But what my more important question is, what kind of people do you got on your board that they won't work with you in this regard and make your life a little easier and give you a spot that's a little closer to the door? Maybe they need to walk an extra few steps.
I will say they approached me a few weeks ago on this, and they told me the problem. I told them I'm willing to move to another covered spot if it works for me and it works for everyone else around me. And they told me that they would get back to me and find me one, but now I'm just told I'm just not allowed to park in my spot.
Well, Walter, here's what I want you to do, and I'd like you to call me tomorrow at the office, okay?
Okay.
Because this is something I want to look into because, you know, obviously this one's rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah.
So call me at the office.
It's been rubbing me a couple days, too.
Call me 877, the number 4, Condo Craze, and we'll pull up your declaration of condominium online, and we'll see how we can help you out.
Oh, wow, great.
Okay. All right,
Walter.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. Okay, we got Ken from Lake Worth.
Hello.
How are you, Ken?
Hello.
You're on the air, Ken.
Okay, first I want to disclose I'm not an actor.
Okay? That's great. But you slept in a Holiday Inn last night. Okay.
I want to ask, you mentioned last week about renters with dogs.
Yes.
You mentioned there's a law that came in, or how does that affect the renters with dogs?
Okay. The board of directors, there's actually an arbitration statute out there, that says in communities, in condominium communities, a board has the right to make a rule that makes a distinction between allowing unit owners to have pets and renters not to have pets. There can actually be a distinction between the two. It's been upheld in arbitration decisions before.
Where do they find that reference?
If you call me at the office tomorrow, I'd be glad to find that case for you and send it over to you. Again, that's 877, the number 4, Condo Craze. But it's an arbitration decision. It's not a court case. It's an arbitration decision.
So be up to the board?
Right, correct. The board can actually make a rule. As long as there's nothing in the Declaration of Condominium that guarantees renters the right to have pets, then the board, by rule, can take the right to have a pet away from the renter.
Oh, good. Okay. One other quick question. Can the president prohibit members from getting up and talking?
Everybody has a right to speak on agenda items. If there's a specific item on an agenda, the statute says that everybody has a right to speak. So generally about that topic. Generally, what I advise associations to do, it doesn't necessarily mean that as that item comes up on the agenda that you get, let's say, 3 minutes for each and every topic that comes up. I tell associations to have a good and welfare clause normally as the last item on your agenda just before you adjourn, and everybody comes up and absolutely is entitled to speak about whatever's been on the agenda at that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets a right to speak. That statute actually says... the statute says the right to attend includes the right to speak.
Yeah, because he's under the threat of eliminating people getting up, so got to keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, understood.
Okay, thanks a lot. And I want to set a new precedent, too. I want two dogs. I want a therapy dog and a therapy dog for my therapy dog. I'm going to set a new precedent.
See you later. Ken, you're making... I'll let you go, and then I'll tell you a funny story that I got. I once wrote a letter not too long ago to somebody who has a dog in Miami Beach, telling her that I represent the condominium association. Do us a favor, and at least when you're going to have your dog, make sure that it's leashed when you walk it through the common areas and keep it on the elevator. Some people, you know, get a little nervous. I get back a letter, certified mail, from not the ASPCA, but something like the ASPCA down here, that tells me, and Ken, you made the joke, but it's not a joke. I actually got a letter from this organization that says the dog suffers from emotional distress when leashed. So we will not put a leash on the dog because the dog suffers emotionally. So I actually wrote back, I don't care if you got to send the dog to a doggy psychiatrist or give him dog. I wrote back, you can give the dog doggy Prozac for all I care, but you will leash that dog when it's on the common areas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So yes, that's how crazy. Yeah, that's how crazy this debate sometimes get. If you'd like to, Ken, thank you for the phone call. All right, we're just getting started here, but that is a true story. I did not make that up. But if you want to chime in on the emotional support animal debate, again, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. But before we get back to the emotional support animal debate, I just want to talk about one pet peeve that I have, no pun intended, and it happens all the time. A condo in Tamarack calls me this week and tells me that their management company is telling the board that the association must use the law firm recommended by the management company, period. There's no debate about it. You got to use the law firm that they recommend, and that's the bottom line. And again, this is something that I routinely hear from associations, and it happens especially in communities that are dominated by senior citizens. Well, here's my position on this. If your management company demands that you use a particular law firm, that management company needs to be terminated immediately and reported to the DBPR, because let's be clear about something. The management company works for the board. Their job is to assist the board in running the day-to-day affairs of the association. They can't require the association to use a particular law firm, a particular landscaper, pool cleaner, or any other service provider. So board members who are listening out there, don't fall for any lines or scare tactics from any management company that says you're required to use vendors that your management company demands you use. You're free to make your own choices, and one of those choices is to seek a new management company, too, and don't forget it. Okay, let's get back to the emotional support animal fiasco. Scott is the lawyer in our office handling most of these pet issues.
Oh, please.
Yes, no, well, you're the guy. You're
the go-to
guy. Is that what it says
on your business card?
Absolutely. Handling dogs and cats.
It says something about canine attorney.
Yeah, right. Scott, how about telling our listeners where in the law this whole emotional support animal stuff is actually found?
All right. Well, everyone always gets confused and says the Americans with Disabilities Act allows people to keep these emotional support animals. But the Americans with Disabilities Act generally does not apply to solely residential condominiums. The ADA applies to public places like restaurants, airports, and things of that nature. The law that gives owners the rights to have emotional support animals, as they're called, is the Fair Housing Act. That act requires a person to prove an impairment which substantially limits one or more of that person's major life activities.
I want to clarify what we're actually talking about here. We're not talking about animals like seeing eye dogs, right?
Yeah, no, that's considered a service animal. We're not talking about things like seeing eye dogs, no. Those types of animals, again, are service animals under the law. We're talking about emotional support animals that have absolutely no special training whatsoever and solely provide emotional help to their owners.
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, as of a couple of months ago, the ADA no longer recognizes emotional support animals and only recognizes service animals because there was a lot of abuse going on, people just bringing dogs to their dinner tables and restaurants, and quite frankly, yeah. And people, people that, patrons of restaurants and owners of restaurants really didn't appreciate
that.
Sure. So what they basically did is they, unless a dog has specialized training to service a disability of a person, they are no longer a service animal under the Americans with Disabilities Act. But that's not the case with respect to condos,
right,
and HOAs, because they're governed by the Fair Housing Act.
Yeah, exactly. The problem for condos and HOAs is that the Fair Housing Act, which governs, again, in our condos and HOAs, that still doesn't require an emotional support animal to have any training whatsoever. The animal doesn't even have to be cute, quite frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, that is correct.
Well, it's interesting because even though the animal needs no training whatsoever, we see unit owners come forward with these silly certification forms claiming that their pets are now certified somehow as emotional support animals. Is there any merit, Scott, to these so-called certifications for these animals?
No, and I think everybody that's been watching the news and reading the papers the last few weeks knows that but especially the Sun Sentinel did a report last week that these certifications are an absolute joke. Anyone with a credit card can get one. You can pay from $20 to as much as $300.
Hmm.
And an owner gets a specially marked dog vest and a collar and an ID and a certificate and DVDs and other official but completely meaningless junk.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
$300?
Yeah, yeah. They're ripping off these doggy owners. And the bottom line here is that if a person is suffering from a psychiatric condition and the pet provides them emotional assistance, again, the pet does not need to be certified. There's no such thing. And people are wasting their money thinking they're getting some sort of certification, but the certification is meaningless. As a matter of fact, just to prove how silly the whole process is, a few weeks ago we went on one of the popular certification websites and we registered a Pluto to a Mr. Mickey Mouse.
No, you did not.
And there we go. The computer printed out a certificate. All right, what's your stance on the emotional support animal debate? Give us a call in the studio, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis. I'm joined by Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls, talking about emotional support pets, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We have Beverly from Hellendale on the line. Hi, Beverly.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
How can we help you, Beverly?
Okay. Okay, hi. This is the situation. Our declaration states no pets, no animals of any kind, correct?
Yep.
Now, when I purchased my place in 2003, I have a parrot, and I placed that I had the parrot. And they accepted me, and I bought the place, right? Then, a few months later, my brother came to live with me, and they never requested that he go through the screening process or anything like that. Now, last year in April, in March, my mother's husband passed away. And a month later, my brother passed away. My brother died of cancer. And so my mom had to come and live with me. She had nowhere else to go, and she had to come in and live with me. And she has two dogs.
Beverly, before we go any further, we represent a lot of condos in Hallandale. Can you please tell us the name of yours just so we know if we represent your condo or not?
No, you don't. I know you don't, because we just switched attorneys.
Oh, okay. So your mom brings her two dogs over to your apartment?
Right. And when she came in, I submitted a letter that she has emotional support animals, and I asked the board to please, accept my mom. So nothing, I didn't hear anything from them. I actually heard from a board member, not representing the board. She wrote to me personally. Anyway, then in November, I receive a letter from the attorney saying that my mom and her animals had 30 days to leave. Right. So I wrote the attorney and I explained, and I felt that this was selectively and arbitrarily enforcing the rules,
right,
and that my mother submitted a letter, and I didn't hear anything back. This was in November, 30 days, nothing. Now they just got a new attorney last month, and I'm starting to get this nonsense all over again. Isn't there a statute of limitations? Haven't they already, you know, lost their right to come after me?
You're saying why? Because they let you move in with the parrot originally?
Originally, yeah, because of that, first of all. I mean, doesn't that make the no pet rule null and void now? They disobeyed their own...
Well,
now I know Eric actually took a parrot to trial once.
I actually did. That was the most bizarre trial. Because you know what was funny about that trial?
Yeah.
We actually couldn't bring the parrot and have the parrot testify, right?
So I actually
had to have the poor guy who lived next door to the parrot.
Yeah.
I actually had to have him testify as to what the parrot actually sounded like.
Objection, hearsay.
You want to talk about the court reporter having a hard time taking it down?
Yeah.
It was hysterical, actually. But here's my two cents, Beverly. Number one, your mom is not an owner of the unit, right?
Right.
Okay. So number one, I don't know what right she has, if any, to move in with dogs. Okay? That's my first problem. Number two is there are two dogs here. Why she would need two emotional support animals?
Well, she had them already.
Yeah, well...
You know, she had them already. And, I mean, you know, she lost her husband. There's no way I can, you know... I mean, she's attached to both of them.
Yeah.
And they do. I mean, she, you know, she has a heart condition. She suffers from depression. That was all stated in the letter. No, but my point is, you see, my brother came to live with me, and they didn't... At that point, they should have asked him to be screened, and they didn't. And now they're asking my mom.
Yeah.
So isn't that, you know, selectively and arbitrarily, they're only doing that because she has the animals. As a matter of fact, the board member even told me, they said, it's not your mom, it's because she has the dog.
Well, Beverly, let me ask you, when your brother moved in, when was that?
That was in 2003, shortly after I purchased the place.
All right, and I mean, yeah, here's the thing with a parrot, you know, in order
for... No, the parrot's not the problem.
No, I understand that, but let me explain to you, because you're asking me whether or not they waive the right to enforce the no-pet policy.
Oh, okay.
In order to waive the right, the board has to be on notice that there actually is a pet on the premises, and then basically fail to, you know, do anything to remove that pet. Now, the difference between a parrot and a dog is that a parrot basically never leaves the condominium. So it's going to be pretty tough.
But our law states no pets, no animals of any kind.
Technically,
a fish is an animal.
I understand that. But if you were ever to have suit filed against you and you would basically claim that it's either selective enforcement or the board waived the right to enforce this rule, you would have to prove that the board had actual knowledge that the parrot was there for X amount of years.
I have it highlighted on my application.
I'm not saying that it's on an application. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to prove in a court of law that they knew about
it. Well, they know. I used to take it to the beach with me. Yeah. I mean, everybody knew I had it. I lived next door to the vice president of the board.
Here's my take.
I mean, there's no doubt they knew.
I
was renting.
Beverly, we got to move on to the next call. But bottom line, I don't think your mom has a right to move into a no pet community with two dogs, regardless of whether or not she's got an emotional support animal letter. Certainly not two. At best, maybe there's an argument for one, and I don't even know how strong the argument is for that one, considering she's not an owner. But we got to grab the next call. How about Mark from North Miami?
Hey, Mark.
Hi. If your show is only about pets, then I didn't know because my question is not about pets.
Well, don't worry. We'll let you talk anyway, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. We have a couple of people in our condo who, for 10 years or so, want every document that's ever been generated or ever will be generated, and the board has spent over 300 hours. Fulfilling all of their requests over and over and over again. Isn't there something in the statute that prevents
also a hot topic? Yeah, also a very hot topic that came up this past Thursday night, access to records. When an owner makes a request in writing in a condominium to see certain records or have access to those records, they are generally allowed to have access to those records within 5 working days. However, the board can make reasonable rules and regulations regarding the frequency at which time the frequency and timing of the request. So generally what you'll find is, and it depends upon your particular condominium association. How large is your association?
And there's 300 apartments, and the same two people have been doing it for over 10 years. Every document, they want them to go back and...
Do you have professional... Hold on. Do you have professional management?
Yes, we do.
Okay, you do. All right, because I can tell you... In smaller associations, right, that don't have professional management, again, that might be self-managed, the arbitrators have upheld rules and regulations by the board that say we're going to limit the number of hours per week that people can access these records, and we're going to limit the days of the week that they can do it. And even in a larger situation, you probably a larger condominium like yours, you probably have to give a substantial number of hours of access, and you'd probably be able to get away with, let's say, something from Monday, Wednesday, and Friday afternoons from, let's say, 3 to 5. That might be okay.
And you don't have to make copies.
No, exactly. You don't have to make copies of these records for these people as well. In other words, a lot of associations get letters that say, please have the following copies ready for me. And you don't have to do any of that. Okay? You just have to give them access to these records. But you can make reasonable rules as long as those reasonable rules and regulations don't really have the effect of chilling their attempt to get records. Then you could limit the number of days per week. You can limit the number of hours. In other words, limit the time period to certain afternoons of the week and certain days in the month. No problem.
And if they want copies, they have to pay for them?
Absolutely. They have to pay the reasonable cost, if any, of making those copies. Okay?
And
so there are, in fact, ways to limit it.
So there's no limit. They can harass the board forever.
You can't limit the number of document requests that they actually file, but you could limit the requests that they can see at one time. For example, you could limit it perhaps to 3 or 4 different items during one particular records request. That you can
do. I understand you.
Okay.
And they can go back 10 or 15 years.
Whatever you have on file. If it doesn't exist, then you don't have it. I wouldn't expect you to have certain documents that are 15 years old.
But remember, you need to keep everything at least 7 years.
Yeah, so most things are 7 years, though. Okay?
That's a big help. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You got it, Mark. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to the emotional support animal debate. Scott, what's actually required for somebody who lives in a no-pet community to get a pet because of some emotional condition that they may have?
All right. Well, the way the law is right now, all that is required is a note from a doctor or even a family therapist that states that their patient suffers from some sort of emotional disability and that the animal would help relieve these symptoms without even really saying what the symptoms are or what even the disability is. Here is what the HUD rules actually say. Persons who are seeking a reasonable accommodation for an emotional support animal may be required to provide documentation from a physician, psychiatrist, social worker, or other mental health professional that the animal provides support that alleviates at least one of the identified symptoms or effects of the existing disability.
Yeah, kind of not much of a criteria there, and I think a lot of people say that that might sound a little too easy to claim that you need one of these prescription pets. And I guess, like we hear about our seminars, there's a lot of abuse in the system.
Yeah,
my gut is telling me that it's a little too easy to claim that you need one of these prescription pets. I'm guessing there's a lot of abuse in the system.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a rant here. And, you know, the thing is, first, I want to say this. First, I'm a dog lover. I love dogs. I love animals. And we're not anti-dog. And most of the condos that we represent that want to basically enforce the rules are not anti-dog or certainly not anti-disability. But unfortunately, we see too many people abusing this HUD regulation that was, you know, enacted to actually protect certain types of people, but it's getting abused way too much. No one can doubt the true value a true service animal brings to an owner's life that truly needs it. But because of the actions of a growing number of people and companies that are essentially defrauding the public by, making these vests and tags and everything, they're basically undermining the people with legitimate disabilities need for, you know, emotional support animals or service animals, because they're basically going to be thrown under the same tent as the people that are, you know, defrauding the system.
Exactly. We got to go to our final break, though. Again, what's your take on the emotional support animal debate? Give us a call here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. We are wrapping up the hour. I'm Karen Curtis, again with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, PA. Give us a call. We're talking about support animals, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We have Fred from Pompano on the line. Hi, Fred.
Yeah, my question is concerning a toilet that leaked above me. and caused damage to my ceiling, which cost me about $200. Now, is the neighbor above responsible?
Question is, can you prove negligence? Can you show that, you know, they actually did something that they knew was going to or should have known was going to cause damage to you? If not, that's what you're supposed to have insurance for. That's what it really boils down to.
Now, wasn't there a period of time when the neighbor, you didn't have to go through the insurance? Wasn't there a gap where they changed the law for a period of time?
Nope, not tonight. You still have to show. In order to hold somebody responsible for damage to your property, again, even if it's the condo association, this happens all the time where somebody has a leak in their unit and they think automatically the condo association's responsible. Not true. You still have to be able to show negligence on behalf of the association or anybody else that might have caused injury to your unit. That's the only way you're going to recover. So, you know, not necessarily. If it was a leak that suddenly sprung up, the unit owner didn't do anything wrong, that's what you should have had insurance for. Okay?
I see.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for the call, Fred.
Thank you.
So much for dogs, huh?
Yeah, I thought for sure we would get it whipped up with the dogs.
Yeah, all right. Let's get back to what we were talking about before the break. We were talking about whether or not the current emotional support animal system that it's in place lends itself to potential abuse. And my take on it, at least from what I see, is yes, the abuse is rampant. And we don't just have senior citizens claiming that they need a pet. We have people in their 20s and 30s saying that they suffer emotionally and that they need a pet too.
Yeah, and again, we're not saying that there's no such thing as mental health problems, all right? You know, some people do need these pets, but that's not what's coming across my desk on a regular basis. What I'm seeing are letters that are printed out from the internet. The very same letters are used by hundreds of different doctors, right, all the same wording, and I found the website where they downloaded this letter from. You know, it's not the people. I'm getting all mixed up here because it frustrates me a lot because, you know, these laws are enacted to protect people that are actually disabled and they're being abused by people that are clearly on their face,
right,
not disabled.
They just want to have their dog.
Yeah, right. As a matter of fact, these laws that we're talking about really aren't laws at all. They're a bunch of rules and regulations made up by bureaucrats in Washington that work for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They make these rules without any input from Congress whatsoever. There is a hearing with oversight, and I read the minutes from when they were amending the rules back in 2008, and the very abuses we're talking about on this show right now were brought up by the Oversight Committee, and their defense to, you know, whether or not these abuses might occur was, oh, we'll deal with it later on, who knows, all right? And when these rules were made, they were warned, as I'm talking about, and they really chose, there's no safety net here. It's just everybody gets to write the letter with no accountability whatsoever, and if you deny them what's called a reasonable accommodation, whether it's reasonable or not, the association's going to be opened up to a ton of liability.
Yeah. Now, HUD, again, like you were saying, HUD was basically warned when they were thinking about making these rules that it was going to lead to rampant abuse, and they thought otherwise, and they said, no, we see no proof that that's going to happen. And I think we can say for sure and certain that HUD was wrong, and again, abuse is running wild. But what bothers me most is that HUD, in my humble opinion, is very much on the side of the unit owners, and here's one example of why. We represented a condo in Dade County that didn't allow for pets. Well, an elderly woman gets a dog anyway. We then file an arbitration action against her in Tallahassee, and only after we sue her does she now suddenly claim that the dog's an emotional support animal.
Mm.
She then files a complaint against the condo with HUD, and as a result of that, that automatically stayed the arbitration case. HUD assigns the case to the Florida Commission on Human Relations, where an investigation was done, and the unit owner's complaint is dismissed. The unit owner, of course, keeps going, and she appeals that decision to the Florida Department of Administrative Hearings. We then actually have a full-blown trial, and again we prove that she's not disabled and the dog doesn't assist her with any emotional problems she claims to have. So we think at that point we won. It's great, right? Well, we were wrong, because after we won the trial, we asked the arbitrator back in Tallahassee to enter a judgment in the association's favor, and the arbitrator now gives us a judgment in the condo's favor. But the woman still didn't remove the dog, so we had to sue her in Dade County Circuit Court to enforce the arbitrator's order. And after we won in the circuit court, she still keeps going, and she filed an appeal to the Third District Court of Appeals, and we won again, but that's not the kicker.
Yeah, here's the punchline. Even though her complaint was dismissed, well, actually, Eric, she filed multiple discrimination complaints against the association, all three of them were dismissed. She lost a full-blown trial. She lost an arbitration. She lost in the circuit court. And then she even lost an appeal to the third DCA. She then filed a fourth HUD complaint. And despite all of these court orders, all of these judgments, basically three judges saying she's lying, HUD demanded that the association not remove the pet from the premises so they can complete their fourth investigation.
Can you believe that? I mean, that apparently the bureaucrats and intake personnel at HUD actually believe they have more power than any of the judges in this state, including judges who sit on the 3rd District Court of Appeals. But we left out an almost funny story, and I guess we'll end on this. When we filed a lawsuit at the Dade County Circuit Court, the case was originally assigned to a judge who looked at our complaint to have the animal removed from the condo. And if you can believe this, the judge said that she was too emotional to ever enter an order removing a pet from the premises, and then went on to recuse herself from the case. And respectfully, I thought it was somehow somewhat ironic, actually, that that same judge probably signed hundreds, if not thousands, of foreclosure final judgments kicking families out of their home, but was too emotional here to kick a dog out. But that's just a perfect example of how some people feel about pets. Many of us, including, I guess, a lot of our listeners, like the pets better than we like fellow human beings, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But this is a hot, hot topic. Yes. Our phones keep ringing off the hook about these issues in the office. But actually, it's now happening from the other end. The phones are ringing off the hook from condos who feel that they've had enough and they want to start fighting back. And they're actually directing our office to now start fighting some of these and to take the whole matter and the whole statute and let's challenge the whole damn thing in federal court if we must, because they're tired of people coming in with these last-minute excuses for pets. But we will see how this debate shakes out in the courts. Thank you for tuning in for another week to Condo Craze and HOAs, and we'll see you again next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.